Welcome to the podcast From Depression to Expression. I'm your host, Oliver Schirach. I have struggled for many years with low energy, self-worth, and depression, which have hindered me to truly live my life and express the beauty that is within me. To help myself, I started to learn a lot of things. After many years, I feel ready to share what I've learned with you. You're at the right place if you want to find out more about what is depression, what can cause it, and how to get out of it again. It's either for you or for someone you know. We will be going out into realms that are not yet accepted by mainstream. We will be talking about the effects of food on your emotions, being unaware of your emotions, shadow work, triggers, soul retrieval, awakening, dark night of the soul, near-death experiences, and much more. Some of those shows would be just me talking about things that are on my heart and what I learned lately. Other shows are with guests from around the world, which will share their knowledge with us and broaden our horizons. Those guests can be scientists, shamans, medicine men or women, therapists, personal coaches, and of course people that went through depression themselves and sharing their experience, what they learned by finding out who they are. Follow me on this journey to learn more about how to overcome depression. Learn to accept and love yourself truly, so we can embrace our authentic self unapologetically and start expressing who we are without fear, but with joy and lightness. Please remember to like and subscribe to never miss an episode, and share this episode with someone you know that needs to hear this information. So without any further ado, welcome my guest or someone else. Without any further ado, let's get into today's show. There we go. So people, for everyone who doesn't have the pre-show link, you missed some really great talk between me and today's guest, Dilmi Mahadurage.
Durake
from Sri Lanka. People which know me from the Oliver Schirach show will hopefully have seen the two interviews I had with Dilmi 1 year ago, plus minus, and her sharing from her depression to her enlightenment or her realization, her awakening, however you want to call it. And in this 12 to 14 months, a lot of things happened in my life and Dilmi's life. And we kind of reconnected somehow and said, hey, it's time to have another interview. And this time it's on From Depression to Expression, my second podcast, which is more focused on, you know, the darker sides of our time, lives, and how we get back to the light and the lighter side and the flow of light. So welcome, Dilmi.
Hi, Oliver. I'm very happy to be here, you know. I'm very excited.
Yes.
Yeah, to meet you, and thanks, you know, like letting me to have this, you know, today.
Yeah. Yeah, we had some, the pre-show. Eventually, I will have to have a pre-show, because now we talked for at least half an hour about NFTs, metaverse, awakening, situation in Sri Lanka, in the world, and all these things that could be interesting for people just to jump in. It's not recorded, people. I'm sorry, I'm not doing that. No secrets coming out there. But there's a lot of things to talk about. And I know Dilmi already told me the different messages over the last year, that the feedback she got from the first interview was extremely beneficial for her clients, and also her mom, apparently, even though she didn't really understand English as well, she got something out of it. So we will, of course, link those two episodes, also the YouTube, if you prefer a YouTube version, at the end of this show notes. But today we talk about depression to expression, and I highly recommend the first one, definitely. But who is Dilmi? Who is Dilmi? How would you describe yourself? You're laughing in the big smile.
If you ask that, Oliver, I should stay silent. You know, that would be my answer. If you ask that question, like in a deeper level, you know. Anyway, if you ask me the question, who am I? Like, who is Dilmi? I'm a coach, you know. I do full-time coaching right now. about how you can awaken yourself, you know, how you can go on this spiritual journey and find out who you are. And that is what I like, basically what I do is I create the background for my clients in order to realize the truth, at least let them come closer to the truth. You know, so that is basically what I do now full time. And also, like, I have gone through my awakening experience in 2019, which I talked with you more depth in the previous podcast. If you're interested, you can check that out. So that's what I do basically, yeah.
And I remember last year when we talked, April and June, you were not yet full-time coach, or have you been already full-time coach at that time?
I think so, yeah. I think even by then I was full-time, yeah.
Yeah, it was definitely in the beginnings, I remember. And we met over some chat on Mindvalley.
Exactly.
And yeah, I felt like, well, that woman sounds very interesting. And, we were before, and then I followed you on Instagram. And you were sharing.
I think
some stuff.
You saw my Instagram post. I was sharing my story, and then you sent me a message that you would like to interview me, and then that's how we connect.
Yeah. So yeah. You're very active on Instagram. Are there other channels you're very active, or where do you find actually your clients?
Mostly, I find my clients' referrals. You know, and also I used to do Facebook ads, and through also Facebook ads, I met clients. And so basically that mostly a reference, you know, because someone gets really amazing results and they go and like tell their friends and, you know, like, yeah.
Okay.
At least I think that is the best market.
Yes, like word by mouth, like right?
Yeah.
Word by mouth is...
Yeah. And also they trust their friend, you know, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely... that whatever you listen, it's like this community building. People can start to trust you, and it's word by mouth better than paid advertisement. So how is your coaching style? I mean, you say you help awaken people, help others to awaken to their own truth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So how do you do that? We don't want to go too much into details, but just like roughly, so people that listen to and say, hey, I'm interested in. And being coached by Dilmi, what can they expect? A lot of paperwork, a lot of calls, mm-hmm. a lot of exercises, or I don't know. I mean, there's so many different coach modalities.
Yeah. Oliver, I could say I have a very different style, and also I'm very intuitive, you know, like I just work with you and then I get the sense, I stay in their presence, and then I feel this is what is best for them. You know, maybe there could be an exercise that I give them. So they start working on that exercise. Or maybe I do them, give them a contemplation at that time. And then they do it. And also I realize that the discussion itself bring them into a different awareness, bring them to a next level. I mean, to a different consciousness level, I could say. And also it's more than, I can say that, more than the technical side. It's about like the energy exchange. You know, I could say that the whole session is about an experience, you know, and it goes with very much intuitively. And then I can immediately feel this is where they are blocked. And then we go with that flow, you know, and of course we do techniques, you know, forgiveness exercises, contemplation, self-inquiry, and sometimes guided meditation, sometimes even hypnosis. And, so sometimes even NLP techniques I use, and that is how I go about it. And like basically what I support them is how they can dismantle their mind, you know. I mean, these are deep stuff, like dismantling the mind, because your mind is the conditioning. What we want to do here is we want to go beyond the conditioning. So basically, I look at where they are attached, you know, like, and then basically dismantling their mind little by little, sometimes gradually, because sometimes people cannot take it too much, you know, sometimes it's not easy, you know. If you take that ego death experience, sometimes, like, before I went through the biggest ego death, I went through many, many ego deaths. So those were not easy. You know, those were very, like, tough. I could say very painful. Because you literally, one part of you are dying. And then you integrate that again, and then you come back. Something like that. And also, I give them unlimited access to myself, which is like a very, like, a exclusive feature, because not everyone has that. Because imagine you talk to a therapist or a psychiatrist or whoever, they have the session and they are gone afterwards. But here, I'm there with you throughout the period, maybe 6 months or 1 year or 3 months. I am there with them. When they're crying, I'm there with them, you know, throughout. Basically, they have unlimited access to myself, which is, I think, huge.
Yeah, so that just that unlimited access, that means if you have a talk on Monday afternoon with someone and you basically find one of these blocks, right, these mind blocks, these attachments to whatever, you need to have this perfect job as a doctor. I mean, that's what comes up a lot, right? You need to be a lawyer or a doctor in India. That's what you hear all the time.
In India.
Or America, right? I mean, that's what I heard a lot.
Or engineer. Yeah, yeah.
Or, yeah. I don't know. So this is like these typical jobs. Some families have the feeling that their son or daughter needs to be a lawyer or a doctor. And you're so attached to that. And now you're basically able to show them through your discussion, like, hey, you're attached to that because of whatever, right? Your parents, your uncles, your grandparents, your cultural background. And they do whatever exercise they do at home to basically work with that limiting belief, some call it, or that attachment or block.
Sometimes I even specifically do limiting beliefs too.
And then let's say they do that exercise. Meditation could be, I have no idea, or forgiveness exercise. And during the night, I have like a big, whatever, perhaps a lucid dream. They normally don't remember, but I remember a lot. They wake up completely sweaty. And the next day, they can just call you. It's just like, hey, deal me, I need to talk. Is that kind of this unlimited access to you?
Yeah, like basically they have the access. They can text me, you know. And then I send them within 24 hours, I gave back to them.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's like an emergency, I don't know what's happening with me and I don't want to be a doctor anymore.
Emergency situation, they can even call me. Yeah. I think that is very, you can't find that service anywhere. I mean, it's very rare. Yeah.
It's rare. I think I've heard it once or twice, but generally, no. Yeah. Right. That's nice. But of course, that's also depending on how much you grow. So after this episode, you have 100% growth in your customers. It's all depending, right? I mean, at the moment, you're able to give that service and that's great. And I think that's very important.
Yeah. Especially, I don't know for how long I can do it. Right now I do it.
So,
a lot, you know, sometimes there are times that I've been texting with one client the whole day. You know, there are times like that.
But
is it okay if I take an example also from a client experience itself? Yes. So one day, Oliver, like one of my clients showed up and then let me tell you why it's very intuitive, you know. So she just like started telling about the first session, or I don't know, not the first session, maybe third or fourth, third session. And then where she was like telling about her life. You know, her story. And then I realized she was started talking about one of his relatives. He was passing away, you know, one of his relatives passing away. And then when she was started talking his story, suddenly I saw myself crying. It's like tears coming down. And I'm like, why I'm crying? What's going on in here? You know, like, and then she's perfectly fine. She's sharing her story. And then I get tears. And then I was just listening and holding the space for her because she was sharing her story. And then I said, do you want to cry? She said, no, I don't want to cry like this. I really am. And no tears come to me and all that. She was sharing. And then I realized at that time intuitively, even though, like she was sharing her story that the relative passing away, it was a very painful experience for her. There's so much deeper pain within her, which she doesn't even feel in her. But I am very sensitive. I feel it in her. And then the next session, I knew what I needed to do with her. And then I took care of one exercise. And then she said she cannot cry. The whole session, she started crying.
Yeah. So
the whole session.
So this is kind of like typically like the body keeps the score. So it's like she kept
it inside. And she doesn't even know it. That's the best part. She doesn't feel any pain. She's just living her life.
She didn't have pain.
She's just numb to that pain. You know?
No, she got used to it.
Exactly. So she's living in that. Basically, she's sitting with it. Yeah.
Now when you go to this example, I mean, when you have such an example of a woman having this experience and not being able to cry, when did you realize that you're so sensitive to other people's emotions and energies? How did you practice that? And the other part is having this example of that woman not actually having physical pain, right? That could have been that she's having neck pain for a very long time or pressure on her heart. And now that she was crying, she's like, wow, this pain is gone. But you said she didn't feel any pain. So how many people do you meet which are just carrying all that pain or that numbness because we got used to, you know, basically suppress all these feelings. So now we've constantly having that emotional pain or even physical pain, but we are not feeling it anymore. So others have to feel it for us. Others have to kind of point it to us until we like letting go and then realize, is it?
Sometimes what is no one pointing to you. You know, you're forever with that. You know, honestly. Yeah.
So,
and then she doesn't even like, the person is not aware because they are very used to living with it. Like sometimes I look at people not exactly about this case. Sometimes I see people and I feel like these people are like living like dormant volcano, just walking here and there. It's just, you know, something could happen and all the pain comes out. You know, there's so much pain and they are just want to be functional in life. But they put it all repressed within themselves so they can be functional and just put a happy face in their life. Yeah.
Yeah, but isn't that called zombie mode? I mean, I was just thinking while you talked about it, I'm just like zombies walking the planet. Because you're not really living, because you're working on suppressing those emotions unconsciously. I'm sure because you're suppressing
because
those emotions.
That is what we are being encouraged. Like if you take at my workplace one time, I wasn't so happy working in the corporate job. You know, I wasn't happy. So it's like I am someone who can see I'm not so happy. You know, and then basically my general manager, she was just like very upset. She said, "You need to be very happy. You look miserable." And then I was like, "Yeah, of course I'm miserable. You know, how can I do?" So they encourage us to pretend, you know. So people also now, like that is from my experience, people also for them to be functional in their life, they have no choice but to repress their pain and live with it.
Yeah.
You know?
For me, it's hard to say how many people live like that. Because I think... I mean, I have a big network. Through the podcast, I've also been able to talk with people from all the continents. I don't have interviews with people from all the countries. That's kind of like the next goal.
But Sri Lanka checked.
Sri Lanka checked, Hong Kong checked, but that's not a country by itself. Even one of these Russian, Chinese little things, countries there. Not Kazakhstan, but something in there. I've also had some. Yeah, one of those countries. Jesus, but that was a short interview. But so these difficult countries, a few of them I have already covered. No, but looking around with this network of people I have, it's sometimes I have the feeling people are just lying. But many times I'm like, people are just, they're they're happy and okay. They're just like, you know, that's how life is. And even if the people seem happy and when you talk to them, they're happy. And let's say they play soccer, football, cricket. I think that's what you play in Sri Lanka and India a lot. And they seem happy, barbecuing and all these things. Is that like your client has been? Like with all, you know, from the outside, they look happy. And then when you start working with them, you actually realize the pain they're suppressing unconsciously? Or do you think like you can feel it in the people right away?
I think I can even feel it, Polly. I can just feel it.
Yeah, you, yeah. Because you're so sensitive.
Yes.
But let's say for a normal person. New.
And also, in fact, Oliver, you wouldn't believe, like sometimes I had to direct outreach to people, you know, and then I was just looking at Facebook profile pictures, you know, where I just had to like connect to someone. Just by seeing someone's picture, like, I feel it. Mm-hmm. You know, and then I was like, I can't do it, this whole social media thing. That drains me, you know.
Yeah. So now, when...
So imagine just by a picture, you could feel it. You
know? Yeah. Talk to Reiki healers and emotional energy healers and soul retrieval and shamanic people, they will believe you immediately because they know how it is. Not from my own experience, because I haven't mastered it perfectly yet. Or perhaps I mastered better than I believe. Sometimes that's also the case, right? That you're better in something than you actually think you are. But it's about, you know, protecting your energy zone from those things, to be emotional aware, but not take the emotions for your own, so you actually can understand the people by seeing the emotions or feeling them, but not actually absorbing them into your own energy, because then it's of course draining, right? So that's one thing. But when did it start for you that you realized you had this sensitivity to other people's emotions and energies?
Well, I think so. I could say that I had the interactions with with some people. I could say there were times that I have a call with someone, and then after the call, I feel really drained and I feel super negative, because in that time I have some binge eating thing. I want to eat something, and then I'm like, what's going on here? Why do I want to eat something right now? You know? And then I realized that, like, that call itself just drained my energy.
Okay, but when did you realize you have this energy connection? Was something happening? Was it one of those mini awakenings or mini ego deaths or some other thing? Or did you just always have that since you're a small kid, that you somehow, you know, felt the energy?
I think it is between the time that the awakening, because I became very sensitive, you know. I became extremely sensitive to energy. I could say in between that awakening time.
Okay. Yeah. I think that makes sense, at least for me as well. You know, going through all the depressions and burnouts and all these things, you get so overwhelmed with energies around you and you're like, what is wrong with me? Why am I so down? And I didn't understand it until I went deeper into these awakenings, personal growth, spiritual teachings, meditations, whatever. I'm like, oh, you have to make your aura, control your aura better, keep it at arm's length from you when you're around people or closer, and don't make it too hard so people will still talk to you. Don't leave it open, because otherwise you absorb all the energies. Braving the Wilderness from Brené Brown. She's basically talking about the same, more in a psychology term, right? Have real clear boundaries, how you talk and what you accept, and all these things, and they will help you to basically shield off those energies. And then there's of course other things. Do your grounding work, whatever that is. Play soccer, go barefoot, walking in the water, in the forest.
Exactly.
Play with animals for some people. Read a book. Watch a movie. Do sports. That could be grounding.
Walk
exercise.
In the nature, you know, and walk barefoot and do gardening. And I've noticed that, like, I have a well backyard, and when I have a bath in that from that well, like, I literally feel so energized, like super energized, because the water is like very natural, and then the well itself is filling it up on it very naturally. Yeah, and very energizing.
Definitely water is one of those cleaning elements many, many people talk about. You have also this...
It cleanses your emotional body as well, you know. It's like a cleanse.
Yeah, it's also several meditations I've heard, shamanic or whatever, guided meditations, where they talk about the golden shower, clearing all the emotions from the day, clearing all the stress from the day. This helps as well, right? So, and with that perspective, having a daily shower suddenly has a different take on it, right? Because you're not only washing away the dirt and the sweat from the day, but you also wash away the emotions and the energies. We are actually with our warming up, because we talked about it in the pre-show, that how do we warm up, because now we have the third interview, right? And we had all these warm-up questions. I have to find some new ones, some random questions. I listen to a podcast, they have random questions, stuff like a book that could be cool to warm up. But this is from depression to expression, and the first interview was basically about that, but let's go a bit deeper on a different way into it. So what is depression meaning for you? When someone says, I'm depressed, or just how would you describe depression with your knowledge you have at the moment, right? That can change in a year, right?
Mm-hmm. I think depression for me is like... you've been repressing who you are for a very long time, you know. And I see depression as like a very good friend, you know, because it is showing you that you're off track in your life. It is in fact giving you a signal that you're off track. So I see depression as something very... very positive, you know, because it is give you a signal. Imagine you don't have that. How would you figure it out that you're off track? This is at least something telling you that, you know what, you better look in within yourself, what's going on. There's something really off in you, you know. It is trying to tell you something. You need to listen to it.
I just come back to the first interview we had, so people, please listen to that. How does the depression start? I mean, you say you're not living your life or you're not true to yourself, but how from your own experience, what are the kind of the first steps to depression? I mean, we are denying it that we're depressed. I mean, I see that around. We're denying, I'm not stressed, right? But you're snappy. You're aggressive for the people around you. But how is it? From your own experience,
how does this all start?
Yeah, kind of like when what are the first signs that you're going towards a depression? I mean, we do not want to be suicidal, right? I've been suicidal in my depression, where you simply want to take your life and say, I don't want to stay here anymore. There's no point. I mean, that's really on the low point. I mean, the lowest point is when you actually do try to kill yourself. That's probably the lowest point, but you don't want to get there. So what are the kind of the different steps from your experience? And also now you have more than 1 year experience of helping people to find out who they truly are. So out of that experience from other people and your own, what do you see? What are kind of like the first steps and people say, well, okay, perhaps I should do something?
I could say the signs of depression could be like I could say that you don't fall asleep well, you know. And then, so when you're not falling asleep, you know, the things start really getting complex and all that. You know, sometimes that can even lead to like complex situations such as like hallucination, and if it stays longer, you know. And then, so I could say that is one thing. And the second thing is the things that excited you, you no longer feel exciting to do it. And you don't have any hope for life. And also you don't feel like being active. This is huge. You don't feel like, even you are depressed, you don't want to move yourself. You want to sit and think about all the stories telling you, like you're just listening to your mind stories. That is basically what's happening, you know, like you take your mind so seriously. That's why.
Okay, I can see. So probably it could be also like when you realize that you start to take your mind too serious, that you should probably say, oh, wow, I'm on the way to a depression. During the depression, you start to just think so much more.
For sure. You know, for sure.
It just starts running up in your head all the time. It's like,
and that's why you don't want more, Oliver, because if you move, then the energy goes to the body activity. But you don't want to move because you're so involved in that mind game, you know, the, whatever the mind says. You don't want to even disconnect for a moment. At that time, you don't even want to listen to the sounds around you or feel. You know, it's just inside your mind.
So what is then the opposite of depression?
What is the opposite of depression?
There's many options.
Opposite of depression could be you're so alive. You feel things. You hear things. You know, you are living in the present moment. You taste food. And you're very active. And you're expressing who you are. And you're being creative in your life. And you have a purpose and meaning. You know, you feel like you're doing a contribution for others. And you take care of yourself. And you talk very lovingly inside you.
One thing when you say you take care of yourself, definitely. When you're depressed, you do not want to shave. Don't want to wear the nicest clothes. Just whatever.
No.
Shower, whatever, once a month is enough. In the word. No, but I think it never got that bad. So in my case, at least. Sometimes I ask myself.
Yeah, I can imagine. It's with the cold weather, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we're not sweating as much as in Sri Lanka here in Denmark.
Yeah.
It really takes a lot for here to just sweat by just walking around. You need to be active, really active to get sweaty. But this taking care of yourself. I mean, I can look around. I know my level of taking care of myself and looking for nice clothes and, you know, shaving and all these things really went down. I tried to be active, physical active. I think that kept me from really dropping, or it probably was my ego keeping me from really feeling what was underlying the depression for not being myself, right? It's like you say, you know, really living who you are, and that's kind of like leading to depression. By moving or by working out, for me, I could not just sit still and feel it. And if I was sitting still, my head was working and planning and going in the past.
And you need to feel in order to heal. This is a good one, you know. You need to in order to feel in order to heal. But those things just, you know, like gather around, because you don't feel them anymore. You're numb to it.
Yeah, I mean, that it's so complex. I can see now that I talk to you. You know, you need to feel in order to heal. But if you have been living in a certain cultural context or family setting, right, when the parents say, no, why are you always crying? Why is it emotional? Shut it up. And then you're like 9, 10, 11 years old, and you just do not show the emotions anymore. And you just say, I am not going to feel anything anymore. And then you're 25, 35, 45. You do not remember that at 9, 10, 11, you said, I'm not going to feel anymore because my parents didn't want that. And now you're depressing yourself. And you do not feel the body pain, emotional pain, but you're struggling in life. Perhaps you have been successful, your manager earning you 10,000 euros a month, 20,000, whatever.
But you're numb inside.
Yeah, but you have some issues in life. I mean, you're not really enjoying life so much. You don't really have passions, right? I mean, there's probably a lot of people which earn a lot of money, but they don't have passions, right? Their passion is working. And then they're basically depressed without knowing, because they don't feel. So then they are not even aware that they're depressed. From that point, I'm just jumping a bit back and forth as my ADHD brain goes. The clients you have.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just thinking of that woman not being able to feel, sharing all this painful experience and not being able to cry, but you were able to guide her there. But what kind of clients are coming to you? I mean, just thinking of that person. So how did she realize that she needs Dilmi to help her move on in life and go to the next level of herself or self-awareness? Or
because they feel so stuck in their life, you know, and then they are looking for some solution. you know, and then they are like willing to do anything. And then like, and on top of that, like, and also like, and then they realize, yeah, you know, I need to do something about this. And then they take action. And I honestly, Oliver, I have realized something very interesting. Those who are depressed, and like normally those who come to me as my clients are in the normal state, and I take them higher state, right? That is what I do. Yeah. So people who are below with mental disorders, they go to therapists and psychiatrists and people like that, you know? But then I have taken, sometimes I have taken people who have depression, and then I realize they are willing to do anything. You know, that is something big. Like, I've noticed that they are willing to do anything. You know, because they know that they need to solve this.
Yeah, but that definitely, I was there. I mean, I'm still, you know, I chose a trauma therapist, which I can be in person. So that's why I didn't go mm-hmm. with you, because I wanted someone I sit in front. I got tired of, you know, from the last 10 years of not working, being so much behind the screen and communicating with people like I do with you. And I said, something has to change. I want someone I'm sitting in front of. It's not so easy with, that's kind of a very expensive therapy if we would do that in person once a month, flying back and forth. But for me, that really helps at the moment. That's what I felt I needed. Yes, when I was really depressed, you want to do everything. And what I got from the doctors, right, then you get medication. And I don't have the feeling, at least here in Denmark, that's where I went to the psychiatrist. I didn't really feel the support. Now, I went to 4 psychologists. It's very hard for me, because back then I wasn't aware of all these things when I went to them. So I do not know how I would react to their treatment, but nothing really worked back then. So do you think, with the knowledge you have, because how depressed were you when in your life, how far down did you go? Have you been lower than the clients you have now, or were you on the similar level as the clients you're treating now?
Well, here's the thing, Oliver, you know, like, I could say when I went through that breakup 10 years back, I was sort of very much, I came to a level which is a little depressed. But then again, I have so much hope. Like, I'm like, that is the thing about me. Like, I never wanted to go to a therapist, because I knew that I don't have anything. There's nothing wrong with it. That's why I look for a coach, because coach, like, you take in every coach, they look at you like you don't, there's nothing broken in you. They take it in a very different way. Because like, when you go to a therapist, because I didn't want to do that, because they put a label on you that I might stay with that forever. I didn't want to do that for myself, you know? Because that is what people are happening. You know, I really didn't want to take it up, because I didn't know whether I could let go of that identity or I would stuck with that identity. You know, so I was very mindful at that time for some reason, and I had faith in me. So I looked for a coach. So that's where it went different, because they don't look at it as your broker. You know, because they take out your best self out.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, the therapist I'm now, she doesn't look at me as I'm broken. So
But I'm saying that, like, you know, if they know people, they have that principle itself that you're not broken. You know, it's just that this is tough right now. It's like very different day approach, you know. So I wanted something that, you know, something different, you know, because I didn't want to get trapped with that identity, because then I knew that I might stay. Stay stuck with that identity and might not be able to let go of it. You know, you imagine they say, like, you are depressed, you know, and then put the label and that's it. You are done for the life. You know, like, I don't want that.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. I mean, I was on the sick leave because of my depression. And then this eventually said, I told myself, I don't want to be in this, you know, sick leave anymore, because as long as I'm there, I somehow energetically bind myself. It's very difficult for people to understand, but you're not in that situation. But you somehow feel like you bind yourself to that situation, right?
It's like you're so drained that you don't want to do anything, you know?
And so I said, I don't want to be in there anymore. And then you know, a few weeks later or 1-2 months later, I got the letter and they said, you have ADHD, so there's no reason for being in the sick leave. I'm like, I'm not in the sick leave because of ADHD, because I had no self-love and self-acceptance and depression. That's why I was there, because I needed someone to help me go back on my feet. I can definitely see when you talk about the therapist, the psychiatrist I went to, right? They gave me medication and it's going to be okay. You need that because you have chemical disbalance in your brain. And I never really believed that. And I have several people around me, which are very close. I'm not going to say who because of privacy. They have 10, 15, 20 years antidepressants and they don't want to go out. And I know from the research, there's very little evidence that antidepressants have more effect than placebo. Everyone I know, they have to change the medication because it stops working. So why does it stop working? Because it doesn't work from the beginning. You have side effects. People, many of them, they start getting bloated, low energy, or just
start. And they, like one of my clients, like, let me tell you something, Oliver, like I had a really good testimonial on this, you know. One of my clients came in and she was depressed and she was taking antidepressants at that time, you know. And then she was being like referred to me by one of her friends because she was also getting coached by me. And then she came up and then in the first session itself, she started crying and all that. And then she trusted me so much on the first session itself, she stopped taking antidepressants.
What? Yeah. You should normally take it lower over 1-3 months.
And
she just stopped.
Wow. Yeah, yes, yeah. And then I was like, whoa, like, you know, like even that was like, you know, something big for me, you know, like because I didn't really expect her to go that fast. And then she did it. And then I was like, okay, I'm going to help you. I'm going to support because that's her decision if she wants to go ahead with that. And I shared that, like, you can still talk to your therapist and share what your decision. And I shared that from my side. And then if that's her decision, and then I was there to support. And then, like, you know, the next day I came up and then I told you this. I have given unlimited access and also I just check on them. You know, and then I asked what's going on. And then I realized she has a sleep problem, you know. And now, which is her mind becomes active and all that. And then what I did with Oliver, we started doing like 7 sessions. Next 7 sessions, we started back-to-back sessions every day. You know, normally we take a weekly session, but we were like, we had no choice. Because I want to, like, now she's in a situation she can't sleep, you know. So I was there like back-to-back 7 sessions. And then she completely let go of taking any antidepressants. So now it's been 9 months.
Nine months. No,
exactly. And she no just antidepressants. Went cold.
She went cold turkey. I think that's the expression the Americans use.
Just exactly. Like, yeah. Yeah.
Jesus. Yeah. But that shows it's all in our mind.
Exactly.
It's all in our mind and it's crazy, but you need support.
Exactly. Because I was there like when she's taking out that, because it's addiction in a way, it's a drug, you know, you're addicted to that. You need to give something else to that too, you know. So I had to do things in order to make her, like, you know, like I gave the workout and things like that. And on top of that, I was there for her as a guidance, you know. So I know, because that, like, when you take out the antidepressants there, it creates a void, you know. So this void, I need to fill it up in other things, you know. So that's why I had to take care of all that. And then I was so happy. I didn't even expect that, you know, there was like next level, you know, that's the thing, you know?
Yeah. But then in that case, I mean, now you answered it through the back door. So you take people which are depressed. I mean, she was on antidepressants. Mm. So you take people and you can actually lift them up to the next level. And there's coming the unlimited access with Dilmi, right? So that's probably the show note title, unlimited access to Dilmi. we'll find out a good title. But but in cases like that, it's really important that you have the possibility to be actually be there for them. Otherwise, it can go wrong.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Otherwise, they again start feeling I'm alone in this, you know? And I don't want them to feel that. Like, I know how... I wish I had that support. That's why I gave that, you know? It's like suddenly the other person disappears. You know, like, I would like if there's someone throughout because you need it, you know? I know how important that is.
Yeah, I mean, one question, I don't know how to formulate it, but it's floating in my head. You're coaching, right? You define mm-hmm. coaching and therapy in that way, which makes sense. And in some ways, I mean, for me, therapy was just like, yeah. For me, the psychiatric keeps you on the pills, right? And that's what I don't like. And I was also attacked from my doctor. Yeah. You didn't want to go to the psychiatrist. I'm like, yeah, I have ADHD, so I have like this focus problem. And I called several times. I didn't have time. And now they dropped me. Yeah, you don't want to take medication. I'm like, yeah, because medication is not the solving thing.
Exactly.
It's not, something deeper.
You're not
rooted.
Solving the root cause.
Yes.
You're not solving the root cause.
Yeah. And I feel so, I just want to help so many people. And that's also why I started the podcast after breaking the hand. That's the reason I hit the wall and the hand broke. And like, I hit the wall so many times before, never, ever anything happened. Why now? But anyway, I don't know if it was the reason. So I started a podcast again. But when I see people which take antidepressants, which are stressed and depressed, and I look at them and I just like, wow, I just see. Of course, it's also mirroring back to me many, many times. But I see a person which has so much to offer, so much to give to the world. And most of the people, these people are really open-hearted.
Exactly. Very empathic. You know, that is the word, very empathic, like, honestly.
Yeah.
There are three clients I could now come up with, which almost all of them are very empathic.
Exactly, right? So it's kind of like if you're very sensitive, empathic, and open-hearted and want to help others and really want to be of service, is that kind of the theme of people getting depressed because we are more connected to the next level of beingness? So we are kind of, I don't know, I believe in past life and I believe that we come back and back and back, however you want to look at that. We talked a bit about metaverse, so could be that we are in one of these computer games, and then when the game is over, we're looking at it, okay, what person are we playing in the game of world? I don't know, it just makes me feel really weird of thinking of that, but it could be the reality, right? I don't know.
Yeah. When
in the first episode, you talked about just all the lights turned off and you just woke up from like a dream. But that's also when, if it's like that, then reincarnation, like rebirth, is very, very likely. It's like must almost be. So could that also be like through a game, you evolve, you get better. If it's a shooting game, a racer game, whatever, these jumping games, you get better and better and better.
Mm-hmm.
So that through the different lives we had, we evolved as a soul, as a being. Which says, okay, we came from kind of like animal-like being, you know, just like eating and having sex and running around and eating and having sex and running around and sleeping to experience the materialistic world with the cars, with the TVs, with the games and all these things. And then in this life, we have evolved and, you know, honed our skills that we are more empathic, we are more here in service because we more and more realize it's not about me, it's not about I want to have more. Yes, it's part, right? We need to have our needs covered, but that doesn't mean we need a Porsche and a private jet. So that we are getting so empathic because we want to serve that, but we are living in a society, in a culture, in a way of hypnosis through TV, through school, through politicians, through books.
Programmed and conditioned.
Right? That this is going against our inner nature, and that's basically then bringing us to a depression if we're not really getting aware of it. Could that explain some of the things, or how do you see it? Because I feel you're a few steps ahead in me. I didn't have a personal waking up from my dream. Not yet.
What is your question, Oliver?
It's like, is this people which get depressed or need your help? You say the three clients come to your mind which have a very high empathic personality.
Nature.
The theory could be that people which are more emotional, more aware, more spiritually aware, advanced, that they are more likely tend to be depressed because of the
empathic
conditioning.
So they absorb the other people's energies, you know. Yeah.
Because we don't learn how to keep it away from us. So we don't
Have boundaries. You know? Yeah.
As you said as well, you got more and more sensitive, you're more and more realized about what's happening around you. Looking at Facebook pictures, Jesus, that's the next level of being. Who knows if I'm actually affected and I don't realize it yet.
Exactly. That's why, like, generally people already, when they go to social media and come out, they feel drained. Generally, overall, they feel that way. But then again, they are not that specifically sensitive, you know, because they are so much into it. They're so used to that experience, you know. For me, I'm hypersensitive. So I come there, I do whatever I need to do, and I come out. Are very strategic with social media because they have done it. They have done all the advanced techniques in order to make it so addictive. You wouldn't believe. If I ever like someone's post, this comes up again and again, you know?
Yeah.
It's just so like because I'm so sensitive and like I'm so really aware about all these things, I can literally see all this pops up. You know? It's so addictive. It has created in a way, but people go so get lost with that. You know, they just completely get lost. But when you're very aware, you can see all the games underlying what's going on with it. You know,
I haven't really used Facebook much. I mean, I'm going
Facebook
in.
Facebook and Instagram both. You know, they use all the techniques to make that.
Yeah. Instagram is very much with the different pictures you like. Right. I started looking at digital art and other artists, and then I just get lost. I mean, once I realized I was 1 hour there, and I'm like, no, you're not going to do that again. You go in there specifically, right? I just go through the first 5-10 posts, a little bit on the top.
Exactly. You become already know the outcome before you go to social media, you know? Like, know what you want, and then if you want to post something, you post it and come on.
But I've heard that like 5 years ago already, right? 5-6 years ago. If you really want to be a successful business person, you're going there with your intention and you're not getting drained or pulled down the rabbit hole. But I was just thinking also when you said people go in there and they're tired when they come out. I was just also thinking because you're so much in your head on the screen and not in the body. You're not in nature. That's also why it's draining people. Mm. I guess.
Yeah, that could be another reason too. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
But people who are very energetically, like, feel things, empathic, I could say that definitely that's the reason why they get drained.
Yeah, but that's definitely, so I can see that you have some emotional people which have been depressed. So another question I was writing down was like, you mentioned it, but we didn't explain it. So if someone comes the first time, and this is very jumping back and forth because we said we take it as it comes, right? As most of the questions I had in the first two episodes. But there's so much more we can talk about. So that's my next level growth, right? Come out of the standard questions I have into the next level.
Exactly. I like it when it's like a flow, you know?
Yeah. So
it's more natural.
Yeah, it is. People didn't realize that I had my 5-7 standard questions. They're like, oh, you should have used. I'm like, I have my questions. I just use those as anchors and then I'll take the input I get from my guest to guide through the whole thing.
Yeah.
I have my standard question, but people didn't realize that. So that's also good. But mini ego death. You know, you talked about like ego death and being in the mind and the traps or the beliefs. And then you mentioned you yourself went through a lot of small mini ego deaths. And it felt like a part of you was dying. So for someone which doesn't know what that is, just comes here, has no idea why they clicked on this podcast and listened for 1 hour to us talking. What is a mini ego death?
What is a mini ego death? Mini ego death, I could say, Oliver, that one part of you is literally dying. One part of you in me, like there's no real self in here inside. You know, that is what I realized in the awakening. There's more true self in here. What you think, who you are, is all these thoughts and the ideas and all that is what you are really identified with. You know, and when this thought pattern, like imagine a one thought pattern just completely get dissolved, completely get dismantled, you have a meaningful death. You know, because one part of you just died. So for example, let me take an example and explain it to you. So whenever having a relationship, and in the past, like I talked about the 10 years back, I literally have made myself as the other as well. I have included other as myself too. You can imagine. So when that person disappears, I literally go through a real ego death. You know, because that one part has to literally die in order for me to let go of this person. So I literally died on that day. I don't know how to explain that. That's why it is so painful to me.
And I can see that now that you explain it like that. I don't remember if you explained it the same way last in the first interview.
Okay.
But
yes.
This is...
I don't think I explained it this way.
No, but you explained that it started with basically the first yes. relationship you had for 2 years or something like that, or longer.
2.5, yeah. Yeah.
And then you had all these different patterns of being a housewife and expecting to marry, having kids and all these things, right? And then you had another relationship where you started to do the same, like, what's going on, right? But going back to the ego death, now I can see why so many people are suffering so much when their relationship ends. Because when you say you put the other person as part of yourself, right? So you kind of...
Yes. Yeah.
Identified yourself with the other person, of course.
Exactly.
Then,
yeah.
And this,
it's so painful. And then when that person goes away, and that other literally has become yourself, and you need to die now. You know, you're literally going through a death. And I could say on that day I died. And at that time I realized, wow, this life is a complete joke. At that, like what I realized in the awakening, true joke, I realized at that mini awakening. That's super powerful. I literally said, wow, like if I'm going to tell what I've shared to this man, to another man, this is a joke here. There's something off. This whole thing is a joke. Yeah, because I was very loyal, you know, and so innocent the way I, you know, I love him. Yeah.
Yeah, of course, in Sri Lanka, it's again a different story than in Japan or in Switzerland or in...
Exactly, it's cultural.
Yeah, in a jungle society in Africa or South America, right?
For sure.
But it was a cultural setting for you as well. But you chose to be in there, and that for you was an awakening. How would you now go into a relationship not with that knowledge? How can you keep your identity? I mean, no, from the first podcast I know, I've seen it from Sadhguru, one of the meditations. I don't remember how he calls it. I'm not the mind, I'm not the body.
Mm.
I'm not the mind. You breathe in, I'm not the mind. You breathe out, I'm not the body. That's like a meditation of 10 or 20 minutes. I saw
that
like 2 years ago.
That's a good one, because it just goes into your subconscious mind, you know. And it just sink in that those two statements, which is powerful. Yeah,
and that was what you said. That was the last pieces for you to actually dissolve of your egos, of the different egos.
Mm.
You don't remember being born in Sri Lanka. So I'm a woman from Sri Lanka, was also a part which was relatively easy to let go. I'm the wife of this man was kind of, yeah, it was the hard part, but in the end, it's probably an easier part. I'm the daughter of my mom and my dad and the sister of whoever. There were other parts which are ego deaths, right? Letting go of those things.
Yeah, right. Letting go of all these, yeah.
Titles, I think you called them titles or names or tags.
Identities. Yeah.
So that's...
Not wife, feeling, girlfriend, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So...
And I've never married.
Yeah, but who knows? I mean, that's another thing I've read in different books and heard in podcasts. Yeah. People said marriage was a thing of the 19th century because you were getting together. So you have easier life because of two incomes and, you know, sharing the house, sharing an apartment, sharing cooking and all these things. Now we can actually afford it to live alone. So the new relations are basically the spiritual relations where both keeps their identity, their being. And of course, that's where I came and said, yeah, I'm not the body, I'm not the mind. So what, you know, how do you go through life when you have experienced that? And how do you then get into another relationship, in another romantic relationship? And how do you not get identified with the other person again? Right? Because I my inner feeling listening to you, I don't know how to explain it, but it gives like this freedom, being able to get into a relationship with another person where you can be truly yourself, authentically yourself. And when that person then dies or leaves for whatever reason, you don't lose part of yourself anymore, because you have always been yourself in that relationship, with or without that person also, right? So how yeah, do we get there? Is right? I mean, it's okay to mourn if a loved one dies, but being, you know, so as you said, like when you're identified, let's say your parents die and you're identified with your parents, like you said, with your boyfriend.
Then
when these people die, you really lose a big part of you, and you lose part of your ego, part of
That Oliver, like, what really creates the suffering is that identification. You know, we get identified not with the real physical person. You know, we get identified with the person who is mentally, you know, a mental image that we get identified with. You know, and that is what really creates suffering, I would say. And now, what's your question is, like, how to be in a relationship without getting identified with the person? Is that your question?
Yeah, and then I just realized it's like whatever relationship, you know, with your kids, with your siblings, with your parents and family, romantic relationship, work, right? You work for 10, 20 years, you make a business with someone. And I see a lot of problems start when you get too, like you say, identified with these people. Let's say you have a business partner or also parents, siblings, and then you're very identified with them and something goes differently than you expect, or you go differently than they expect. And that's when then the fights start and the low and bad energies around. But if you're not identify in both ways, then you can just be as you are, right? And then things are, it's so difficult. It doesn't come out of my head. It's like, how do you define that?
How to stay in harmony, you know?
Yeah.
In a relationship without getting identified.
Yeah, and without getting down when something is not working how as it expected, just like, okay, that's how it is, right?
Yeah. So I could say, like, why we are getting identified with polyvis, like, because we are identified with those expectations, you know. If you're not identified with the expectation, you know, and then we could be very, very free inside you, you know, because you're not coming with any personal agenda. And then a person who has an agenda, they can't really truly love the other person. You know, but true love is about, Oliver, you wish for the other person's happiness, even though it doesn't serve your ego.
Yeah.
But true happiness, true love is.
That was the other question, because I started to trying to explain what was in my head. It was like, really, how to love someone, right? When are we truly loving someone? When are we truly compassionate? When are we truly unconditional? What are the prerequisites? What do you need to work on yourself to be actually able to give the unconditional compassion and love to whoever?
I think that's a very good question, Olive. That's a very good question. The reason why we cannot unconditional love is because we are coming to the relationship what I can get out of this relationship.
And that's already a condition.
The agenda. Yeah, they are coming with an agenda, you know. So it's about getting to their agenda. So how can you truly listen to someone? You know, I wasn't an exception. I was having my own expectations in the relationship. And that's how I realized how painful that is, you know. And it's unbelievably painful when it is going on the other way than your personal agenda.
It's just like the question and then you answer it. I'm like, of course, the answer is so logic because you have conditions. That's why you cannot unconditional love, because you have the opposite
whenever. Exactly. You have conditions. If you are this way, I would love you. But if you are this way, I would love you. But that is the exact reason why this so-called love becomes hate just like that, you know, because there's a room for hate, you know. But in unconditional love, it's just love. There's no room for hate. But if you take so-called any relationship, once they broke up, they are like, they hate each other, you know.
Hate
each other. They literally like, they just like look at as an enemy, you know.
Yeah, I try not to.
What's going on? Like this, how come there could be that love turn into hate just like that? And it's that clearly true love, you know. Or is there something else?
No, I mean, I had this discussion with a friend of mine, and she said she went through her awakening and that other man just triggered her, but they were really getting, you know, in their hair. And and she said, and then we met again, and everything was fine. She said she never experienced something like that with any other person. If she would have had a situation like that, as they had, the next time they would have seen each other, they would just have gone like opposite directions. But with that man, she could just talk again and they could work. And then another issue came and boom. And it was for her like there were so many trigger points and ego deaths or beliefs which were dissolved. But it was only possible because each of them was, for whatever reason, she doesn't understand how she could do it, have this unconditional love. And just every time they met again, it was just like nothing happened before. And she's like, and then it's crazy, but I'm also trying not to have conditions with other people. And how can you actually dissolve these conditions? Or where are we aware when we go in a relationship, either way with friends or work or romantic relations? Are we aware of these conditions? Do you see that? I mean, now with your clients, do you help them to release those conditions in their relationships as well? Or is that nothing you look at?
Well, if I see something coming up, then I will definitely address that and share that you better take care of this, you know? And if I notice it, I would share that. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So it's not something you specifically work on.
Yeah. Not really. Yeah.
No. But I think actually we have gone through really much here. I don't want to start repeating or pressing down for the people listening. I guess it must have been hard when you're not in my brain following my structure. But just to summarize, we can see depression is kind of like starting a lot with having problems to sleep, right? Falling asleep or probably staying asleep as well. And that, of course, causes then other issues. I mean, I know that when I'm not sleeping for a long period, then you cannot really think straight anymore.
And that creates many mental disorders too, and then it leads to hallucination and, you know, many other health issues.
And when you go further down that depression, I mean, it starts with stress, I guess, and not being able to really release so you can sleep well. And then it goes down to losing the hope for life and feeling like you don't want to move. You kind of get stuck in your head, and the head starts to move more in the past and the future.
Exactly.
And why you're not good for this and that, right?
Yeah. Oliver, before we anyway wind up, I want to say something that I noticed a common thing about the depressed people. You know, there's one thing which is really causing the depression, which I haven't seen that many people addressing that. You know?
Okay.
And is it possible that we, like, my laptop battery low? Is it okay if I plug that?
You cannot show the screen of the laptop by looking from to the camera. You cannot turn it around.
No, no, I'm not doing anything. I just put the plug in, you know. Okay. So, okay, let me tell you, this is something I don't think many people, I haven't noticed that people are addressing this issue, you know. I have noticed something, almost all those three people, there's a common factor in everyone's life, which was there was a narcissistic relationship. Yeah. And I found that is very interesting because, like, back to back, I'm seeing this pattern coming here, like, in almost all my clients. And I was like, wow, this is very interesting. This is not something I'd noticed that people are addressing. You know, this is like a new perspective on depression. You know, number one root cause. I can notice that. You know, because if you take a narcissist, come to a relationship, you know, and they are very self-centered and they are looking for even what people discuss about them, what they need supplies in order for them to feel worthy, you know. So they take from the other person until the other person becomes so drained, you know, so drained. And I come in and with my coaching, I put the wall in so that they can no longer take supplies and energies out of my client. Do you understand what I'm saying? Like, this is something big, and this is number one root cause that I've noticed, at least with my clients. And I want to see with more my experience expanding how that is going to change. But right now, that is one of the root cause I have noticed, which is huge. And in fact, I had to go through the same situation, you know, because I also had narcissistic relationships in my life, because I know how draining that is and how much that takes energy out of you. You know, it's unbelievable. Because these narcissistic people come into their life, first thing that they do is they take out this trust in your life, you know, trust about yourself. So they can manipulate and get what they want from the other person, you know. And then they take. And then also they make you feel so worthless, you know. They make you feel so worthless. There are two clients, their parent is narcissistic. You know, and there's another client, the relationship is the narcissistic partner. This is unbelievable. I think this is supposed to be addressed in a very big way, Oliver. That's why before we even wind up, I wanted to address this because it's huge. This is huge. You know, we could even discuss, have a whole episode on narcissism because that's huge. It's just that important, you know, because before, you know, if you take my YouTube channel, before I go even do my spiritual content, I make sure that I talk about narcissism, you know, because I realize this is supposed to be shared, you know. And then the spiritual community is about love, compassion and all that. But at this time, you need to take action. You know, you need to make sure that you have your boundaries set. Otherwise, you're going to get, like, that is exactly what I do with my clients. Otherwise, they're going to get drained because the narcissist is take. And to a point that other person is so drained that they don't have any energy left inside them. And they are like leaders, like, just like that.
Yeah, I definitely can see some of my friends which are low, depressed or stressed, mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. they are in some kind of narcissistic relationship. I mean, I had a lot of talk with a friend of mine here in Denmark around Christmas time, like November, mm-hmm. December, because he has been going from one narcissistic relationship to the next. And even me, I didn't know his girlfriend, but talking to him, like, get away from that woman, she's not good for you. He sees it now, so he tries to really teach about narcissists. And I know there's YouTube channels which are only talking about narcissists.
About narcissism, I think it's supposed to be there. It's very important. I believe it's a very important topic. You know, I'm still learning more and more about narcissism, and this is huge. I don't know why many people aren't talking about it.
I think we're not aware of it. I think it's the general awareness that they are narcissists.
Because, and another thing, Oliver, like empathic people are very prone to, like energetically also attract someone narcissistic. Because empathic people want to give their power away. And narcissistic people want to take the power from the person. So they match very nicely together.
But isn't that also perhaps
looking
at some of the theories which are out there for, I mean, everything is opposites, right? I mean, if you go in a relationship, the love language is different between the two people. Because that's nature, right? Plus minus is pulling to each other. Like you said, it's kind of like if you want to give, you will find someone which wants to take. But looking at the different theories about, you know, awakening and the spiritual life and whatever, new age and whatever you want to call it, is we are here to grow as spiritual beings, as souls, and learn something new, as I said also before in the podcast. And that's why we are choosing a certain life with certain parents, with certain people, that we are learning the lessons our soul wants to learn. And then I'm like, that's also when I asked before, like these new relationships with romantic partnerships, less a marriage, more kind of like a spiritual growth, where both are keeping their boundaries with the open heart, right? With the unconditional love to the other person, but without investing in pulling in the energy and identifying identifying with the other person anymore, but living together and growing together, giving and taking from each other, that would be the perfect match. But it's
it
feels like there's not that many which have achieved that. I guess the people you look at, which are 50 or 60 years old, and you look at them like, you look like 40, both of you. You're both fit, healthy, strong bodies. You have a young face, a young appearance. You're earning a good money. You're traveling all around the world. How do you do that? I think it's by spiritually growing to a certain level where you, as you say, not identifying, but you're living your life. You say, that's me. Those are my strengths. This is my partner. And we do not have the same strengths, but we share. And we are not taking from each other.
Then take and give has a balance.
You know, exactly.
The nature, receive and give, there's a balance. But if you take narcissistic and this relationship with the victim, you know, there's no balance in it. It's like take to the level the other person is completely drained out.
But isn't an empath then also probably just giving freely? I mean, that could also be, because I do not see.
There's a problem with the empathic person too, because they are giving their power to me as well. There's a problem with that too.
So it's learning to actually say, no, it's okay that I don't always give. I look for myself. When I look back, I had a little mind movie in my head while you were talking. And I'm like, I do not see that my parents are narcissistic, at least not heavily, perhaps a little bit. But on the other hand, you know, there's always a give and take. And also my relationship with my ex-wife, I don't have the feeling like there's a heavy narcissistic. I have the feeling like I just gave more. But I had a hard time to receive. So, because I do not see my ex-wife as being a narcissist at all. I have a hard time to do that, for at least from the podcasts and explanations I heard. But I can definitely see that I was just always giving and receiving has been a hard part for me. And even before I was depressed at work, right, receiving praise was very.
And also, it could be that, like, you know, for masculine energy, giving is easy, but it's about receiving is feminine energy, you know? So sometimes I even, like, had to work on with my clients how you can receive, you know, because they are sometimes used to giving but not so comfortable in receiving. It's a problem,
That's I probably shouldn't say it so publicly, but yes, that's definitely my problem. It's the receiving part. As I said, also at work, I mean, I said after my first burnout, they came and said, "Oh, you did great, this and that." I'm like, "What the fuck? This is kindergarten work I'm doing here, and they give me the praises instead of saying, okay, thank you, and accepting it. And okay. I can see it also in the last 10 years of my marriage. I was just giving, but not receiving. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I guess people are also tired of trying to give you if you do not want to receive.
Yeah.
And then yeah. eventually they're just used that you give, but you will not receive. So they stop trying to give back. Mm. So I think you also need to open yourself up to receive. And I heard that in Terrific. Money talk.
Exactly. Yeah.
There's also Ken Honda,
I think. Stop with money, yeah. Ken Honda also addressed that you are not feeling comfortable at receiving. So you're blocking that energy for money to come into your life.
Yeah. And it's also the relationship. So there's Mindvalley has also the relationship quest, and it's also about forgiving and opening yourself up for a new relationship instead of saying, yeah, now I gave everything, I don't deserve, and so on and so forth. But yeah, I can see we can definitely talk many hours more. Yeah, when I try to summarize up, it was just to kind of make sure that the people understood where we are jumping around. So the thing is also, do you have any, you know, to keep some actionable advice in the podcasts, you know, what is kind of like one of the, you know, I'm not asking about the advice like in the Oliver Shearer show, but more like, what have you now seen? I guess in the last year you had much more work, at least on the Instagram, it looks like you had much more clients and feedback I see on your Instagram all the time. What is like one or two of the most important things you see coming up and up and up again that helps your clients to grow to the next level or to release some of these heavy energies or blockages?
One thing I would like to ask them to do, Oliver, is I want you to be aware what really drains you. Become really aware about that. Who are the people? Who are the people who drains you? You know? What are the places which drains your energy? And what are the activities that drains you? You know, when you become aware about these things, you start noticing, like you start becoming more and more aware about your energy. And it is very important. So you can start seeing for yourself what's going on, what really leaks my energy, you know. If these activities drain you, sometimes you can outsource those activities. You know, if there are people who are constantly draining your energy, you can take a break from these people. You know, it's not self-loving if you keep on having, even though knowing that it drains you, having that relationship is like you're hating yourself, literally. It's not self-loving. You know, that is not the way to go. Yeah.
Yeah, it's that's a tough one. If you have like a really great job,
it is.
Let's say you have a really great job, and you have, I don't know, you work with 5 or 6 people, and you have one person which is just draining you. But that person, you need to work together 1 to 2 hours every day. What will you do then? What would be your advice for someone that says, okay, shit, every day I have, let's say, 1 hour with that person, but that person just drains my energy. But the other 5 people I work with and the job, everything is great. It's a great place. It's a great location from where I live, and everything is perfect. But this one person, what would you do?
So draining.
Yeah, it's draining you so much that you come home and you just need half an hour sitting to just kind of
ground yourself with what happened and reflect what really happened. Yeah.
Yeah, but the other people are not drained by that person, right? Yeah. It's just you. Yeah. So it's it's not something like all the other people complain about that person, and then eventually the boss has to say, sorry, you need to go. It's only you which is affected, right? So what will you do? Will you then say, okay, shit, I have to bite into the bitter apple and leave that company, find another position?
Well, if I'm in that situation, what I would do is I would simply understand this is the nature of this person. Because just by understanding, something shifts in you. You know, because you're accepting this is how he is. So you don't expect otherwise. you know, because there's an expectation in you that they would treat you in another, you know, so you release that expectation.
Yeah. There we go. Very well. You see, that's no, but seriously, I already forgotten. You just said it like 15, 20 minutes ago. You said it's the expectations we have for other people.
Exactly.
But still, if we want to become very aware of the people, places, activities that drain us, and even if we see that person and let go of some of our conditions towards that person, could also be a family member,
maybe,
but they still drain you, but they still drain you, then you kind of, I mean, I just remember you meet people for a reason, a season, or a lifetime, and that person which told me said, he has let go of family members. It was very hard, but they were not of any positive use. They were draining him, I guess, and causing a lot of drama and a lot of other things. So then another hard thing, especially if you're in a certain culture where family is everything, then you have one or two members of that family. When you're around them, it's just drama. And but awesome. Become aware of what drains you. Definitely.
Yeah. And another thing I could also adapt to the same thing, you know, you can also become aware of what energizes you.
Yeah.
Who are the people who energize you? What are the activities which energize you? And where are the places which energize you? You know, there could be people who just by being in their presence, you are so energized. You know, you get that energy and you do some activity and like literally your energy is boosted. You know, for example, for me to do this podcast would be a boost of my energy. You know,
And I was thinking,
I honestly have two lists of these in my OneNote. Yeah, you know,
And how do your clients react when you tell them that? How easy is it for your clients to actually find the drain points and the energy points?
Well, it's like, you know, you need to become aware more and more, you know, and then like you just go about your life and then you even become like aware about your energies. And I don't think it takes a lot, you know. You go about your life and you start noticing, and each time you notice, you just write it down somewhere so you can remember. And then the places when you feel very depressed, so you know that what energizes you, can start doing those activities and you can get the same energy back, you know.
Yeah, but how did when you give this to your clients, so far has been the feedback from the clients doing that? I mean, so generally speaking, is it easy for them to actually just go about and write it down, or did you get feedback like, whoa, it's so difficult, I simply don't know? Or
I got really good feedback. They found it very easy to figure that out, you know, and then they shared that they became more and more aware of what is really draining them, and then some of them they just even stopped completely some of the activities, you know. And then they saw like the narcissistic relationships, how those people are really like taking their energy away. So they became more and more aware about their life, energetic, which is new for them, you know. So they get trained with that. And I found they found it wasn't so difficult for them to figure that out, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just being more authentic and true to yourself, I guess. Exactly. Honest with yourself, like saying, okay, I see it. Okay. I love to do that, but afterwards I'm so drained. Okay, I better change it. And a lot of these activities, especially in food, I love to eat this, but afterwards I'm tired. I mean, I love to eat burgers, but I know half an hour later I feel terrible.
So. You see that also takes energy away. That is becoming you aware, you know. If you know that when you eat a burger, you know that it drains your energy. Yeah. You don't do it, you know.
It's not always possible. Sometimes the smell is just too strong. But generally,
I know. Maybe you need to go through the consequences. Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes you have to choose. Like, I want to have a really good 5 minutes, or and then a terrible hour afterwards. But let's finish it up here. We can look at the narcissistic relationship, or you know how that affects people another time. It doesn't have to be 1.5 hours. It can also be a 30-minute, 45-minute episode. Mm-hmm. Where do people find you, reconnect with you? I mean, I put all in the show notes.
But they can find me from my Instagram, which is Enlightenment Coaching, through Facebook, which is Devi Mahadurage, if you search the name. And you can send a message through that. And also you can check my website, which is dilmecoaching.com. Yes.
Okay. dilmecoaching.com. Interesting. So that's your business, Dilme Coaching.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much for this new podcast version. And after 1 year, a longer talk, finally again.
Yeah.
And people just send DM messages to Dilmi or myself. You find me also on Instagram. Don't ask me how. Oliver Schirach, I guess. There's not that many. There's only another one, but I haven't really talked much with him. So my name is not so spread. And if you have any feedback, anything, send me.
Please send us the feedback. So I get more like encouraged to do this, so then we know that like people are getting help, you know.
Yeah, exactly. It can also just be great, awesome, I learned this and that, or I would love to know more about this and that and that. So we can also have questions and then say, hey, please ask Dilmi this and this, I love it. I would love that as well, because I don't have to find out all the questions, because I do not represent all the world. I just represent my little universe. My metaverse.
You can also share that. Stay tuned for that podcast, you know.
Yeah,
we
can probably talk about the metaverse another time as well.
Yeah.
What you believe, where it's going, and what the influences are on people that are searching the seekers. Super. But let's say goodbye to the listeners. Good night, good morning. Whatever you do, and thank you for listening to another episode of This Case, From Depression to Expression.